time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Good Friday morning, everyone. It is Good Friday morning, and I wish everyone who celebrates a blessed Good Friday. John Hancock in, Michael Kelly out today, but he joins us over the celebrity guest line, and he joins us from that great American city of Las Vegas, Nevada. Hello, brother.
Hey, brother. Happy Good Friday to you. I guess you say that. I don't know. It's one of the more somber holy days of the year, right?
No question about it. No question about it. What brings you to the city of Vegas?
I went out here to see the Grateful Dead play last night, and I come back today, and it was a spectacular experience. I was at the Sphere again, John. It's really a cool place. You got to check it out.
Yeah, so kind of paint a picture for me. Now, the Grateful Dead, they're all dead, aren't they?
Yeah, well, no. Jerry Garcia is dead, and some of the folks who had played with him over the years in and out have passed, but Bob Weir's still alive, Bill Kreutzmann, Mickey Hart's still alive. Their lead singer now is John Mayer, and they've been at this for 10, 12 years, and now they're doing a residency at the Sphere, which is just an unbelievable place, John. It's 20. I can't explain it to you how overwhelming the sound and the visuals are. It's unlike any concert you'll ever go to.
It's a giant ball, and you're sitting in the giant ball, and you got the music all around. They got the walls moving, and
exactly, it feels like the walls and the ceiling come down on you at certain times. What they've been able to do with the visuals are cool.
Is it a little unsettling?
It can be. There were a couple of times where you feel like, oh, my goodness, I'm getting vertigo, or I don't want to stand up or sit down. But it still was. I'm so glad I came out here to do it. I saw you two here, and this time I saw the Grateful Dead. And the Sphere is quite a treat.
Well, there you have it. I'm glad you're enjoying yourself down there. Well, we're 4 days into the administration of Kara Spencer as mayor of the city of St. Louis. I don't know how much attention you've been paying, but do you have any initial thoughts?
Oh, I not really, John. I mean, I thought her speech was fine, or her inaugural address was fine. You know, I think for Kara Spencer, it's a rather simple task ahead of her, and that is just get the basics done and make this government work. I don't know. Seems like a really low bar, but a lot of attention needs to be put to it. I mean, it is kind of a change that a mayor in the city of St. Louis is talking about, hey, I'm gonna pick up the trash and I'm gonna pave the roads, compared to what we've been discussing for the last couple of years. Agree?
Yeah, and I think I think she's got a real opportunity on her hands here, and I'm gonna be interested to see how she behaves in the regional aspect of that leadership. You know, there's this proposed police training facility that would join four counties, Franklin County, St. Charles County, St. Louis County, and St. Louis City, state-of-the-art police training facility. And there's a $50 million grant from the state government that's going to go in. And now these four counties have to form a co-op agreement to utilize that facility. And that's going to be an early test of her sort of spirit of regionalism, I think.
Doesn't seem like it should be that tough, right? I mean, can you think of something that St. Charles, Jefferson County, St. Louis County, and St. Louis County or St. Louis City agree on more than, hey, we need to deal with crime, and here we have a collective way to address it? Seems to me like an easy early victory for the mayor to get the region focused on an issue that's really defining us nationwide.
And the new police board, which will have four of its five members appointed by the governor, probably will be very sympathetic to participating in that as well. So that's one to keep an eye on. I have noted now that we're into past spring break in the legislature, and we're just under now a month left in the legislative session, I've been struck by how peaceful this legislative session has been. And I think some of that is due to Governor Kehoe's leadership, but I also think some of it's due to the guy who arguably was the biggest impediment over the last several years there, former State Senator Bill Eigel. How much do you attribute the reason for the relative calm to Kehoe versus the removal of Eigel?
Well, Well, I have to tell you, there's a bit of me that's nostalgic for the fact that I liked it when the Republicans were dysfunctional and unable to get things done. And that was led by Bill Igel. He kind of had become the face of this, hey, let's break everything, even then stuff that doesn't need to be broke. And now we have a legislative session that's absent of him. And therefore, we're starting to see the legislature move forward and push some stuff. As a Democrat, I kind of wish you still had that dysfunction going on in the Republican Party. As a Missourian, you know, who wants to see, you know, government move forward and to continue to see it, you know, address the issues of its citizens, I think it's a good thing, John, that he's gone.
Well, one of the things the legislature is in the process of doing, and is on the front page of today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch, is it looks like they've sort of reached a tentative agreement on placing a pro-life measure on the ballot in August of 2026. And the big internal fight had been whether you were going to have exceptions for rape and incest. And it looks like the GOP has coalesced behind that position. So they're going to put this thing on the ballot with a rape and incest exception. Do you expect the results to be any different from what we had with Amendment 3 last year?
No, I don't think so. And I think there'll be resources that flood in. Missourians, you know, handily approved the legalization of abortion rights on the ballot recently. And now to watch the, you know, this waste of money, effort, time to try to undo the will of the people just doesn't seem smart to me. And I think it will ultimately backfire, John, but I think the voters will come out again and say exactly what they've been saying, which is get focused on basic government services and get out of our personal space.
Well, I don't know. I think having the rape and incest exception will make some difference to voters. And it passed, but it didn't pass overwhelmingly last year. I think it got, what, 53%, if memory serves? I could be wrong about that. But
well, you know how it is. Scoreboard, that's a victory. And Missourians will continue to support abortion rights. And I think this is a futile effort, but it's also kind of speaks to what I think we're going to continue to see down in Jefferson City, which is a constant attempt to overturn the will of the people, because there's more folks that are reasonable and left of center in Missouri than our legislature wants to recognize.
That's Michael Kelly. I'm John Hancock. We need to step aside when we come back. We're going to visit about this case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the Maryland immigrant who was originally got here illegally. He's been shipped off to El Salvador. The Supreme Court has weighed in, and there's some real battle lines being drawn between the judicial and executive branches of our government. We'll talk about that after this, right here on 104.1 KMOX. And welcome back to KMOX. John Hancock alongside Michael Kelly joining us from Las Vegas, Nevada. Michael, I suspect you've been following this case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, an El Salvadorian native who did enter the country illegally, since has had some court rulings as recently as 2019, where he was allowed to stay. We know that he is married. We know he has young children who have special needs. We know he was working as an apprentice in the Pipe Fitters Union in Maryland. We also know that he was picked up and arrested years ago with other members of MS-13, which is a violent union, violent gang. We know he's got some gang tattoos on him. And at the end of the day, we don't know whether he is actually a gang member of this violent MS-13 or not. And there's a lot of facts that are in dispute, but the Supreme Court has ruled 9-0 that he needs to be returned to the United States and given due process before being deported back to El Salvador. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and that's the most important thing, right, John, is that, you know, all the things we know the Supreme Court said he's entitled to due process, as is any human being, regardless of whether or not they're American or whatever they may be accused of, is what the Supreme Court said. Now I think we see the push and pull of whether or not the administration, which is supposed to execute the laws, will abide by it. And I think there's a strategy and a play by the Republicans, but mainly by the Trump administration, to continue to prolong and draw this stuff out, John, in the hopes that they can push a narrative of preying on people's worst instincts rather than standing by the Constitution. I don't understand what they're up to here. Do you think this is smart for them to continue to defy the Supreme Court?
Well, I think the politics of it are potentially troublesome. And yes, I believe fundamentally that everyone deserves due process. We are built in this country on the rule of law. And you cannot so empower the political state to just remove people from the country without due process. So I think there's a tremendous sympathy by the electorate who supports what Donald Trump wants to do in getting violent, illegal immigrants out of the country. I think that's overwhelmingly popular. I think the political risk they run here, if they persist in defying clear and decisive court orders, I mean, how often does the Supreme Court rule 9-0? Not very. And I think they're at risk of potentially bleeding a great deal of public sympathy for their position generally on immigration, which probably right now, if you look at Donald Trump's favorability ratings, he scores the highest on immigration. So I think there's a political risk here.
Yeah, even scoring high, even though he's not deporting even at the same rate that Joe Biden was. Yeah, I think it's more of a visual thing than it is actually a policy thing. It's just hard to see people's lives played with this way. And hopefully it'll be resolved soon and that the president will abide by the Supreme Court's ruling.
Well, the rule of law is sacrosanct in this country. It always has been. We are a nation of laws. And I certainly hope they are abided by. And, hey, this guy might be every bit worthy of being sent to that prison in El Salvador, but we just don't know. Interesting conversation the other day. We don't talk about the other side of the river very often, but over in Illinois, Senator Dick Durbin, who I think is the number two ranking Democrat in the U.S. Senate, he's 80 years old, and he was asked point blank if he was going to run for re-election. He did not answer the question. And so there's increasing speculation that that seat that he's held for 30 years, I think, might become open in the 2026 midterms. Do you have any thoughts about Durbin and whether he should run, or and what would that seat opening up mean?
Okay, first of all, don't start salivating as a Republican. It's Illinois, for goodness sakes, John. It's going to stay in the Democratic column. From a more regional perspective, the loss of Dick Durbin in the United States Senate, truly just based on what leadership brings back to their state, is one of the great intangibles that will be lost by the region. You know, we've been spoiled, man. We had Roy Blunt, who had done leadership. We've had Dick Durbin, who's done leadership. Dick Gephardt. And, you know, there's real dollars that come there. You know, Scott Air Force Base and the expansion of Boeing is directly tied to Dick Durbin's leadership. I don't blame him, John. 80 years old, had enough of dealing with a lot of the nonsense that is Jefferson City. He looks doggone great for 80 years old. It would be a major blow for the St. Louis region, even though Dick Durbin's focus is on the state of Illinois. The intangibles that come to our region as a result of his leadership has been helpful. I wish him the best.
Well, you look at National Geospatial, you know, he had a hand in that as well, getting the NGA here. And 80, you know, in the U.S. Senate, 80's not that old anymore.
He's a spring chicken.
Yeah, he is. But I do kind of think, based on the way he kind of dodged that question, I think he's likely to hang it up. And you're right, it's going to be a midterm election in Illinois. I think the midterms, you know, reading tea leaves, look like they're going to be very rough for the Republican Party. And a state like Illinois is not a place where I think Republicans are going to lay a lot of money in to pick up that Senate seat. They're going to be busy defending what they've got to keep their majority, which I think is somewhat in question as we look in the crystal ball in 2026.
Yeah, that's what the history would show us, is that the Republicans would continue, would lose control. Hey, you can't blame this guy, man. You've watched all your friends. You've seen all reasonable thought leaders kind of evacuate government. It's kind of sad. It sounds like the rules of the game have changed, and he's kind of the end of this changing of the old guard. I think you'll see Chuck Schumer's and others gone as well soon.
That's Michael Kelly. I'm John Hancock. The Chris and Amy Show is next after the news right here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX 104.1.